If Congress remains deadlocked in reaching a big deficit reduction deal, as it has been for 2 years now, the automatic 10-year spending cuts will remain in effect when fiscal 2014 starts on October 1st. The caps imposed by the 2011 Budget Control Act would cut the Defense Department's overall planned spending by $52 billion and the Navy's share by $14 billion. However, the military, in theory, would have more flexibility to apportion the cuts. They would not be across the board, unlike in 2013. You would think that would make the second year of sequestration less painful than the first. Admiral Jonathan Greenert, the Chief of Naval Operations, says you would be wrong. Take shipbuilding, he says. Even though every program in the Navy was cut by about 10%, the Navy managed to hold all of its major ship construction contracts intact, in part by using unobligated funds from the year before.
We had what we call prior year money. We had money available from previous appropriations and laws coming in that we used to get us through 13. That's not available in 14, and so the impact on the investments accounts will be deeper cuts and a concern. My goal, the Secretary's goal, would be to preserve shipbuilding and those ship contracts and those aviation contracts as much as possible, meet our forward presence requirements, as I mentioned before, and make sure we hold on to multi-year procurement. That is the most efficient way to purchase equipment and platforms.
In 2014, Greener told reporters the Navy would have to once again find creative ways to keep from canceling or modifying its hard-won multi-year shipbuilding contracts, but the task would be more difficult.
What we need to do and what we're doing is you sit down and you look at the contract and what have you contracted, specifically have you contracted to do? What's in each line item and how much does that cost? Is it feasible, for example, to when you build a ship, for example, you get the ship, you get documentation, you get some ancillary gear, and you get some support, and you actually get some outfitting spares to get you through the first number of years until industry, who you contract for, can procure the spares into the future. So you say, all right, can we continue, can we keep this under contract at what might be 14% less than we had originally in the budget, and then deal with it maybe later? Is that feasible? And we will do that with each of the builders. That's a notional example. It's not precise, but it's notional. These are the things that we'll have to do. Some of the things we buy have that sort of flex into them, and some of them don't. And if they don't, we'll lose the unit. And if you use the unit, all the other ones in the contract, that price will go up accordingly.
Greenert says he also has serious concerns about the Navy's military readiness. The service, like the Army, Air Force, and Marines, has already had to cancel numerous training and maintenance activities in 2013 and would need extra money in 2014 to begin to recover from what leaders are calling a consumed readiness. But under a second year of sequestration, Greenert says the Navy would have to cancel even more ship maintenance windows.
About half of the 60 availabilities that we have planned will have to be deferred. You can't buy those back right away. Ship is available for a maintenance period. If you don't do that maintenance period and that ship is then called out to do other things, it's a missed opportunity. So it takes time to get back. Reduced certification training in FY14 would affect FY15 deployers, so we've got to reconcile that. We've got to watch our air wing readiness. Folks coming back and shutting down due to inability to have money because they're not deploying right away. You can't get down far deep into the readiness bathtub, as we would call it. It makes it that much harder to get out. So we'll have to watch that.
Greenert says the Navy would also once again face a quandary with regard to paying one of its biggest bills, personnel. The president elected to use his authority to exempt military members from sequestration in 2013, but Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel suggested in a letter to the Senate this month that DOD would look to find savings in military personnel spending if sequestration continues, and that civilians might be subject to involuntary reductions in force. Greenert says he would advocate to protect civilians from either RIFs or furloughs, but he says with both military personnel and civilians, it's very tough to reduce the force fast enough to produce immediate savings.
It's very difficult in a year of execution, in a sudden year, to say, all right, we're going to reduce manpower. Well, that's payroll, so you have to get people off the payroll. And under the current rules and regulations, you have to pay them to depart, especially if it's non-voluntary. You can put in enticers to retire or whatever, or you can involuntarily separate them. That payment precludes much savings, and we need the people in the near term. In the business that I'm in, my people man equipment. We don't have people that get equipment. It's sort of the other way around. And so it doesn't work well with the Navy. In the end, though, the decision is made by the president to exempt military personnel. And you may recall he made that decision last year. He has not made that final decision yet.
If sequestration continues beyond 2014, Greenert says it would have an impact on the size of the Navy, a Navy that Sea Power advocates on Capitol Hill argue is already too small. The service is aiming to build to a fleet of 300 ships by 2020. Greenert says that probably would not be achievable if the budget caps stay in place for the full 10 years.
If we can retain the ships under contract in that multi-year that I mentioned before, where each one costs significantly less because you're buying them in bulk, if you will, or in larger quantities, if we can't, then there's multi-year sort of unravel. The unit price goes up, you have less money, and this just starts spiraling down. Sequestration continues beyond 14. I'm pretty confident that it'll be we will not be able to meet those goals. That's too much at $50 billion a year.
As for this year, Greenert says the Navy is advocating for a reprogramming of funds so that it can begin to restore some of the training programs it's been forced to cut, as the Air Force recently succeeded in doing when it restored flying hours to several combat units that had been grounded for several months. But in terms of military capability, he says the Navy would still be at a lower level of readiness than it would like. It currently has only one carrier strike group and one amphibious ready group prepared to deploy.
Now, the rest of the fleet is not ready to deploy with all the capabilities that are needed that we would normally have in our fleet response plan, and that's really the issue that we have there. A year ago, I would tell you, we had three carrier strike groups and three amphibious ready groups ready to surge. And if there were a contingency that we had to take on a large operation, the surge force would be a concern, and the concern would be the capabilities that we would bring and whether or not they were the right capabilities. It may not be readily apparent to many because as you look out there, you say, hey, it kind of looks the same out there. But it's the surge issue, and it's a real issue.
In Washington, Jared Serbu, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.